is Trina Teeler, and I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for Anthony Gormley's The One Another project. The day today is October the 4th, and it's 25 minutes past 6. Could you please state your name, age, and where you're from, please?
Hello, I'm James Perry. I'm 53, and I live in Lewes, which is East Sussex.
How are you feeling today?
Yeah, I'm feeling okay. I haven't felt particularly nervous, which slightly surprises me. I think once I committed to the idea, then I kind of got rid of the idea of being nervous at that point. I'm obviously feeling a little odd about going up there any minute now, especially with so many people around, because it's Diwali today, and so I'm aware that I've got an even bigger crowd who won't be very interested in me than lots of others have had. So I'm feeling sort of interested in what's going on as much as anything.
What made you want to take part in this project?
Do you know, that's a really complicated thing to answer. I can't give you an absolute one word or one sentence answer. I can tell you it's not to do with the project exactly, it's to do with me. I'm interested in what Anthony Gormley is doing, and I really appreciate the work he's doing, and I actually think it's a fascinating idea, the idea of the watcher becoming the watched. So normally you go to a museum or you stand here and you look at the statues on the plinths, and you are the passive audience looking at something that is even more passive, sitting on a plinth. And here it's the other way around. Suddenly you are the work of art on the plinth, and I think that's a really clever idea, especially given the way that Anthony Gormley models a lot of his works on his own body. So he's really putting his money where his mouth is by getting us to do the same thing when he's been given the chance to use the fourth plinth. So I am interested in that, and yes, I do quite like the idea of being one of only a relatively few people taking part in that. But I'm actually much more interested, if I'm honest, in what it will feel like for me to be up there. It's a little bit along the lines of that, you know, that Peggy Lee song, Is That All There Is? And where she, in the song, she describes every kind of experience she's had in her life, and at the end of it, is that all there is? And I sort of think I already know what it'll feel like, and so I'm not the kind of person that's going to go bungee jumping or jumping off of a bridge or doing any kind of daredevil thing. I'm sort of interested to see how it would feel to be standing on the plinth, which is an entirely unnatural thing, surrounded by people, particularly in London, which is a place where, you know, no one talks to you on the tube. You know, it becomes an art form in itself, not engaging with the people around you, which I like. I actually like that anonymity. I don't like, I positively like the thing of the anonymity of London, by which I don't mean I hate anyone looking at me. Don't look at me. No, it's not that. I just like that feeling of moving through the crowds, knowing the back streets, knowing the back ways, knowing the back door of various places, and just getting through it. I think that's there's something very comfortable for me there. And now I'm doing the opposite thing. I'm actually standing in the middle of a crowd. I would never have come to the Diwali celebration, never. I wouldn't have dreamt. I would never go to any big event in Trafalgar Square. And now I'm actually going to be standing on a plinth. I'm going to be the second most noticeable thing in the square apart from the stage. And I want to know how that feels. I don't know. I don't know if I'll gain anything or whether I won't know what I've gained until afterwards. I don't know whether it'll be an interesting way to pass an afternoon or whether I'll learn something more about me. In recent years, I've been living my life not in the most predictable way. I had a big career that I gave up on purpose. I went and lived in Cornwall for a while, and I went from being an executive one day to working in a tea shop the next. And that was such a fascinating leap, such a huge jump to make. And since in the last decade, I've been making lots of little leaps like that. So I've, you know, moved about 6 times. And yet I have to reconcile that with the fact I'm not a natural traveler. I'm not the kind of person who wants to rough it. I still want the smart life. I want to sit in bars having martinis. I'm not going to be in a tent at a rave. I'm not about that at all. And so I'm actually sometimes feel like I'm cutting a path that seems quite different compared with everybody else's path. Well, I don't maybe look the way that my life actually is. And I you know, I'm living sort of a quite a smart life in a way, but I'm actually very free, I think. And this is part of that. So whether I'm going to learn anything from it, or whether I'll feel confirmed by it, or whether it will make me think, no, I have to do more, or I don't know. I'm not sure yet.
And how come you've moved around and you've had these varied jobs?
I was doing a job. I was a director in a big fashion house in London, and all the usual reasons that people start having those sort of, you know, almost everybody who works in London has the same kind of crisis where they're thinking, what on earth am I doing? Why am I bothering? Why am I working so much just to do this? So exactly the same, completely typical response to that kind of lifestyle. But instead of just having more expensive holidays or buying a bigger house or trying to compensate for the bits I didn't like by having better other bits, my wife and I just decided that we would instead jump off the cliff and see where we landed. And we already had a holiday house in Cornwall, so that was rather an easy way to do it. But I just handed in my notice, and we moved. And when we made that decision, we had no idea how we were going to live, or we only had the money we had in the bank. But you know, that doesn't mean that we had no money at all. There was some money in the bank, thank goodness. And so since then, we've carried on moving. It's once it started, we don't want it to stop. And so we were in Cornwall actually only for 2 or 3 years, and then we went to Bath, and then we came back to London and lived in Rotherhithe for a little while, and then we went down to Sussex. Now we've moved to a different place in Sussex, and in between we've had several months in New York, and increasingly we've been going away in the winter. And this last winter we went to Spain for 5 months, and we drove down, and I can't drive, my wife's a very nervous driver. So that was quite a big thing for us. You know, you think by 50 you'd be able to do that, but for us that was quite a huge thing to be driving abroad. We loved it, and we actually found that because we were nervous about the drive, we took a whole 10 days to get from Santander down to Malaga, and staying one place a night, two nights. Loved it. Absolutely liked the sensation of finding a new place, looking around, sucking it dry, seeing how we felt about it, and then moving on the next morning. And so I think our particular stone is going to roll even quicker. So I don't know how it can be any quicker than that, but there's still some more of this particular path to go until, I don't know, I suppose we think one day something will make us stop. We'll suddenly think, oh, that's enough now, but we're getting quicker.
And you're in East Sussex at the moment?
Yeah, Lewes, which is near Brighton.
How long have you been there?
We've been in East Sussex. It's actually our third move in East Sussex, which is unusual for us in our recent history, but we've moved in sort of quite different places. Actually, it's our fourth address in 5 years, I think it is, we've had in East Sussex. We've been in this particular apartment only for, I think it's 4 months, and we, you know. In recent years, we've made our money mostly by the place we're living in. We make it nice for ourselves and then realise we can sell it at a profit, and so that finances the next bit of the life. And so we realise that now, that after 4 months we're thinking, oh, should we go now? You know, so we're going to, I don't quite know how it's going to end up. Last year we actually rented for a little while, normally we buy and sell, and we even loved that. We loved the freedom of it, not even owning the house. And it's, in a way, it's just a sort of shock to us because we're, you know, people who like our houses to look nice. So I don't know quite how we're going to ratify that, really. There's a question that we've got to ask ourselves. How are we going to have this Rolling Stone lifestyle and fit it in with the fact that we want it all to be rather nice? So
do you take work with you wherever you go? How does that
I have a kind of low-key interior design business for myself. And I only have a few clients, and usually they need work just as I need the money. And buying and selling in a way that means we're financing ourselves forward all the time. So just as we maybe are thinking, oh, less money than we thought we had, then we sell and we can move on. So the work goes with me, but I don't have a job that I can say, you know, I start at 9 on Monday morning and finish at Friday at 5, I would never work like that again. My wife occasionally takes part-time jobs, and that's a lot to do with the fact that that she likes that stimulation of going outside. She likes to be able to come home and tell me about the people that she's been working with, or to see the world through a different glass. So she does that. But obviously that is also an income. So our income is, we've got used to the idea of being rich in March and poor in January. As long as we know we're going to be rich in March again, it's okay.
Do you have any children?
No.
Is that a conscious decision?
Probably. Maybe accidental, that it just went on a long time. We've been together a long time, and I don't think either of us have ever felt any kind of maternal or paternal urge, so we've never aimed to have children. And I'm not sorry about that. I don't particularly feel any need or any lack, and I know my wife doesn't at all. She isn't astonishingly maternal or nurturing. I think if she had children, she'd probably become one of those mothers who'd kill you if you touched it, because she's very protective. But she feels no abstract yearning for a child, so no, it's never happened.
What will you be doing up on the plinth today?
Well, I really don't know what I'm going to do, in a way, because when I applied, I started thinking about what I would do, and I did have a very grandiose idea. I thought I was going to be terribly arty. And I started contacting circus schools and street entertaining organisations. I had the idea that I wanted to play with the idea of the watcher being the watch by turning myself back into the watcher again, by arranging for a lot of people to be doing all sorts of things at the base of the plinth. I thought, you know, I had my jugglers and tumblers and that sort of thing, and I would actually do nothing and watch them. And I thought that was quite funny, but maybe I'm certainly right for being such a smart ass, because it turns out it's Diwali. So it's pointless. I mean, I wouldn't get permission from Trafalgar Square management, even if there were any point, because no one would hear the people doing, you know, entertaining at the base of the building. There'd be no room for them. So I've given up on that. And I have got two little things I'm going to do. One is, I thought, what is the least likely thing that a chap would do up there? What is the least, in a way, thing that you'd put on a plinth? And what's the least likely thing that the audience would expect a man to do? And so I've got some knitting with me. And I might sit and knit for a bit, because that, I hope, will make people who are looking at it think, why is he knitting? And that's a good question. Why do you care? Why do you think it's odd that I'm knitting? Why shouldn't I knit? I actually don't like knitting. It's not a blow for my own freedom, but it's a blow for all the men who... It's a little bit like when women walk through red light districts and say they're reclaiming the streets. Well, I feel as I'm reclaiming a little bit of soft southern gittiness for all the men who might want to knit out there and shouldn't feel as though it's an odd thing for them to be doing. And then I might do a thing where I will mimic certain famous statues. So I might make myself into a statue up there. But I'm going to see how I feel. If it really is the case that I just feel I'm another member of the audience for this Diwali stage, then I might not do that. I'll see how I feel. Depends how I feel also about being mic'd, whether I'm aware that I'm talking to somebody through the mic and somebody might be listening. Because I don't think anyone on the ground is going to be terribly fascinated by me, so I'll see. I quite like that idea of just seeing how I feel about it. And I did feel some pressure to perform. And in a way, the Diwali thing has sort of taken that away from me. Now I think I don't care. It doesn't matter.
Well, so why are you a bit nervous about being mic'd? Where does that come from?
Oh, well, the thing I said at the beginning about having my voice recorded. I've always been strange about it. I hate having my voice recorded. I hate having my photograph taken. I don't know why. I have no idea. I hated having my photograph taken when I was much younger. I was... didn't like the results. Now I look back at the photographs when I was 20 and think, I wish I'd realised that I was not too bad, you know. But I think lots of people don't like it, and you look through the world through your own eyes, and that includes looking in the mirror, and you hear through your own ears, and it's always slightly shocking to be confronted with the reality of yourself, which might not match what you're trying to express, you know. It might not match who you feel you are, and it's sort of awkward to be slapped in the face with that. And I just have always felt uncomfortable about it, but you know, it's fine. I have no fears about talking to people or presenting. In the past I've had to present to people from a stage to a big audience. I don't care about that at all. I don't feel nervous about that at all. I just don't like the recorded image, and I don't like having to confront it myself. So I may never even watch it on the internet. I might do it secretly.
Would you say you're doing it for anybody in particular? In particular, your album, please?
Me? I've got a sort of subtext at the back of my head, which I don't know if it... I'm not quite sure if it's how real it is. And that's that my sister died a year ago. And funnily enough, it was almost exactly a year ago. It was like tomorrow is a year when I was... and about this time, it was almost exactly this time of day, I was in a taxi from Victoria trying to get to the Royal Marsden Hospital before she died. And in an odd way, I think it's such a funny coincidence. I almost feel something to do with that. I don't know if I've even quite formulated it. Maybe because at her funeral, I was asked to do the eulogy. And so when you do a eulogy, you try to keep yourself together. And so I didn't have a jolly good cry about it at the funeral. And I don't know if I don't, in a way, feel slightly unresolved. You know, my father's funeral, I pissed like mad, and actually felt fine. You know, it's kind of got rid of a lot afterwards. Terrible, in a way, terrible to say. I felt almost finished as soon as the funeral was done. And I'm not sure if, you know, if that's what funerals are for. They're for dealing with all that stuff and getting it all out and having a good look at it, and then, you know, without feeling any kind of embarrassment about that. And I think because I couldn't, I'm not sure I'm quite finished. And I don't even know what I mean by that. I don't intend to talk about her. In an odd way, I wasn't astonishingly close to her. We were adults who'd gone completely different ways. But I just have got this little thing at the back of my head that it's odd that it's almost exactly a year ago. So I just, you know, it's a little tender thing that's going on inside me that it might be a little bit for Linda as well. I don't know.
And lastly, what are the three words you've...
Soft Southern git.
But is that why?
Because I am. That's what I am, a soft Southern git. I once had a lady who was working for me. She invited me to her house for dinner, and her mother was staying with her. And they were from the north, and her mother was there. And, you know, I usually get on quite well with older ladies, and I thought I'd got on quite well with her. And next day at work, I said, "Oh, your mother was nice. I bet she thought I was a soft Southern git." Then she said, "Oh, did you realise that?" And I thought, "Oh God, she did think I was a soft Southern git." I thought, "Oh well, I embrace it. I am." There's nothing wrong with that. Why not?
On that note, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.